Oh my goodness. Welcome to Front Row with Jackie Rowe. I know you guys have been wondering, where is she? Why is she not on here giving us all these juicy details and stories and wellness and, you know, histories and But Jackie Rowe do have a life too as well. And of course, unfortunately, you guys knew that my sister passed and then my younger sister had some situations and, you know, it's all taken care of now. So God is great and your girl is back. So welcome to Front Row with Jackie Rowe, and I have the honorable podcast interview that I've been waiting for. When people say, oh, they know Jackie Rowe, yeah, you know of me, but you don't know me. So I do have someone that's known me since I was 12, 13 years old. Now, you know, I just turned 60, right, guys? So what does that say for you, right? This person knows me very well, but he has a very interesting story that I've been longing to get him on here to have him explain everything and make sure that you guys were fully equipped with who he are and what he means to me in my life. So welcome, Mr. Mel Hark. This is what I call, he's going to give you his real name and his story. Welcome, Mel Hark, to my podcast.
Hey, it's my sister. How you doing?
I'm doing well now that you're here. I'm doing fantastic.
It's a beautiful thing. Yes, we do go back many, many years, as you would say, as a preteen, before you was even a teenager.
Yes.
And there were some beautiful times and whatnot, you know. My government name is Carl Miller, but my attribute when I was part of the Nation of Gods and Earth was Mel Hark. Mm-hmm. And I'm here today with my sister to tell my story. And my story consists of how I semi-raised her, how I semi-gave her the name Miss Broadway, how we used to hang out.
And true facts. He did give me that name, Miss Broadway.
Go around to Brownsville to listen to music, different parks and things of that nature. And yes, you know, we had a story. I used to get parties and stuff like that, and she was always in attendance and things of that nature.
And, you heard what he said. Yes, you heard what he said. We used to go around the parks in Brownsville, a different park. True story. A lot of people don't even remember that because I myself may say it, but a lot of people can't really convert and say that, oh my God, that was actually true. He can say that it was actually true.
Actual facts. I mean, because, you know, at that time, you know, I was driving. You know, a lot of people wasn't driving. Me and Jackie used to just, yo, what you doing? Nothing. Let's go hang out. And we would go to parks, you know, we'd go to Brownsville, they playing music in the park, we go listen to the music, or, you know, around that Ali Drew Noble Plaza, or we would go out anywhere, we would hang out, but basically...
No, tell them the cars that you was driving
At that time, I was driving a 78 Celica, N78, a Toyota Celica and whatnot, you know, and then prior to that, I mean, after that, I had a Thunderbird, a 79 Thunderbird and whatnot, you know. But, yeah, me and Jackie, we go way back. Jackie went to school
Trust
with my
me.
Little brother.
Yes.
And outside of that, you know, Jackie had a little crew of girls that she used to be with and whatnot, you know. But she was like my little sister. I mean, and she was about that life. You know, she was no joke. She was about that life. You know, I mean, fashionable, she was. You know, my sister used to wear, what's that, a white mink hat, you know, white glasses. Yeah. You know, always, you know, very stylish and
Thank
very
you.
Humble
Thank
and
you.
Whatnot, you know. And this is something I learned, which I never knew. Out of all the years I've known you, I never knew you was Jamaican.
Yeah.
I never knew you was Jamaican. Yeah. I mean, I can go all the way back to Eastern Parkway in Utica, right where my Mr. Pool was at, and you used to live in that building there. I remember you and your sisters and whatnot.
1102 Eastern Parkway.
Yeah. So we go back and whatnot. Like I said, I used to do house parties and things of that nature. And Jackie even got in some of my ciphers with the Nation of Gods and Earth and Albany Park and things of that nature and whatnot, you know.
Sure thing. I think you was one of the people then besides my older sister, God rest in peace, I Medina Angela, introduced me to the Nation of Islam early at like about 13, 14 years old. This is early 77, something like that, right?
Yeah, about 1978.
So this is how far we go back. This is a guy that, like, he's my big brother. Like, when you see me, matter of fact, Calvin Klein was just here. He saw the picture. He was like, with me, you, when he was in the park, he was like, holy shit, Jackie, look at you. I said, that's a real gangbanging picture right there. That's a real gangbang. And I was only 12, 13 years old.
Yeah. And it was so amazing that the crew of females that you used to be with, is basically, they was all up under you. Anyway, it wasn't like no... I'm a leader, but they had that much respect for you.
Right.
And they used to, like, basically follow you. Whatever you do, they did. You know, and they was respectable. They wasn't out there. You.
Monique. It was Monet.
Yeah.
I don't even know where she at. Monet and.
I keep asking. I think it was somebody named Gwen. I think I mentioned to you.
Gwen. It could have been Gwen. There was a couple of them. I have to look at that picture again close to see. But the one person that I couldn't find and I was always looking for was Monet. She was a dark skinned sister with long, thick black hair. And when you say whenever I was getting ready to get in, she was right behind me, like,
absolutely.
Let's go. What we doing? Who we stomping out? Who we fucking out? Whatever, you know? But they were like that back then from that early age, you know, from I was younger. It was always been like a presence of me taking people to the next level. Wherever I was going, people were willing to follow because they knew I was going somewhere about something in my life.
But like I said, you had a charisma and a style that was very distinguished. And that's what, you know, I was attracted to you as. Not in a relationship type of attraction, but an attraction like, yo, this sister here, she can hang out with me. You know, it's not a problem. I mean, she can hold her own. And
I think I was the only female that ever hung out with you.
Basically, outside of my children, mother.
Yeah.
But basically, yeah, outside of that, yeah. You know, and at the time, I think you was waiting on Bizzo to come home from jail, you know, or before,
yeah,
I don't know.
This way before Biz.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This
it was
way,
before
I didn't even have a child.
Right,
remember,
right,
I got pregnant when I was 14.
Right.
So this is right after you went to jail.
Right.
Right after you went to jail. No,
right,
I was.
Right, right. But when we used to hang out, like I said, I used to get parties and you was always there. When I needed you. And if I needed just to talk, we talk. And
yeah,
like I
we
said,
sure
we hung
did.
Out. And I mean, we hung out. It wasn't like that. And like, I can go with you, but it was Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Kim Johnson and them. And,
yeah,
and Cheryl Johnson
yeah,
and them and whatnot. You know,
the
these
original.
Are the people that, you know, like I could say I grew up with. Like, you know, when we say Crown Heights, Flatbush, East Flatbush. See, there's a history that we both know. And
right.
A lot of people don't know. It's like they come along mid-80s.
Right.
You know, we come 70s. And
right.
When I say that, like, I go back with a lot of brothers and sisters. Like, I go back Jolly Stomper
I was supposed to say that.
And that's
Jolly,
what I mean.
Tomahawks,
I go, yeah,
yeah,
I go back Jolly Stomper mm-hmm. days, you know, Sweet Kevin and them, you know, mm-hmm. because, like I said, when they was living on Crown.
Which is Sweet Kevin is also Cheryl Johnson and Kim Johnson brother.
And
then they
Bronson.
Have Derrick Johnson,
yeah.
who was another person that taught me along the way, too, growing
yeah,
up.
Yeah, and they was related to Rainbow. And
Rainbow.
Them, who was
that,
the
yes.
president of the Jolly Stomper.
Right,
Greg
exactly.
And
Greg
sister,
and them, yeah.
What's their sister name? Not Donna.
No, is it Donna?
Donna Monica? Johnson. Because I know they're the Johnsons.
Yeah, they're all Johnson.
Johnson
yeah.
They're all the Johnsons.
Yeah, I had a letter from Kev with Greg Walk a while ago. He kind of like was kind of mad at me for something in the letter. I'm looking at him like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. But, you know, he'd be all right. Hope he's coming home soon. But, yeah, that's how far we go back.
Right.
We go back so far from the 70s. And I'd be like, you know, when somebody say they know me, I'd be like watching and listening to people. I was like, yeah, you know, I know the people that know me and I know the people that know of me. And there's such a big stigma about me, you know, with certain people that don't know me. They just make up shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Then the people that know me either don't like me because they want to be my friend. They want to talk to me, but they don't know how to go about it. You know what I'm saying? And so as I grew up in life, I just sat back and I watched people like you that was in my life, all the men's them, because it was dudes that raised me. And we're talking about me. Let's talk about you. You was no joke back in the days. Well, no, don't try to front it off and share it off, because you had an exterior that probably a part of you jumped into me just watching you as a dude, because you had that whole little way about you. Nobody could fuck with you. That was your experience. You wasn't having it. You liked to fight. I liked to fight when I was young. You know what I mean? Everybody was respectable and kind of afraid of you. And that's how I think people got around me and started to be afraid of me, because I learned a lot from watching you. You know what I mean? So just to keep it in retrospect, give the respect back. You know, I learned from men's. I didn't learn from any woman. No woman in the street taught me anything. It was from you guys. It was from either the Jelly Stomp, the older guys, Derek, like I said, Ski, you know what I mean? Danny, rest in peace. Bernard, you know what I mean? Those older cats from Crown Heights that people don't even talk about. Before I even hit down the hill, it was up, hit down the hill. These are the people up the hill that helped to, you know, put the ingredients into who I became as a young lady, because I had such stern men's like you around me that wouldn't let me dare step foot out of my rim into the equation
mm-hmm.
of being flirtatious
mm-hmm.
or being a chick that was, you know, oh, I want to be known for guys to just have sex with. I wasn't having it, and I have to thank you for that.
Absolutely, because see, that's one of the things that I would say was the attraction. It was the energy that you gave off, and that energy was like, you would say, you wouldn't take no shit. And if you knew how I was back then, some people considered me a bully, this, that, and the third. And I could say that, you know, I came up the way I came up. And it's like, I didn't know these cats. And what was so funny about the way I came up in Crown Heights, okay, Jolly Stomper, Ghetto Brothers, but that was right there. I was center. You know, when they went to do the education of Sonny Carson, I wasn't available, but everybody that participated in, I know them. So I can go back that far in Crown Heights, like we talk about Pappy Mason, T. Mason, and them. I can go back and say, yeah, I was in their house. I know their mother, Nana. This is no joke when I say these things. So when I hear people say stuff about people in Crown Heights in that area, I say, you know what? What was so funny with us is that I grew up with Derek and them. We Jolly Stomper, 25th Division, in their building, in the basement. And then I don't want to be a gangbanger no more. So my enlightenment came around, Born Alive from Canarsie, and he gave me knowledge of self. And with that, I moved away from the gang activity. But I moved into a cypher with the Nation of Gods and Earth. And the Nation of Gods and Earth was some of these brothers that were younger brothers, which I was teaching. Mm-hmm. And at that same time, as I said, this is when I noticed you. We noticed each other, and we started hanging out. So that cypher of my life was always there. But then something happened along the way, whereas some of the cats that I grew up with, I could say cats originally, mm-hmm. but they were Jolly Stompers. Mm-hmm. I could say Kevin, I could say Daryl and them. So we had differences. So they went their way, I went my way. But we still all got along. Mm-hmm. And I just had a whole different set of brothers. And I was the type of brother. Mm-hmm. I was the type of brother that I can go to Bedford-Stuyvesant, I can go to Brownsville, I can go to East New York, I can go to Queensbridge, I can go to Red Fern Project, I can go anywhere. Not saying that I was a gangster or anything like that, but I just moved out of the cipher of your stand, let me just stay in Crown Heights. But that
and
was
moved
one of,
anywhere comfortably.
Absolutely, put that in absolutely, it. Absolutely. Yes. And one of the reasons why I stood where I stood at, because I grew up there. Like I said, I can go back to the education of Sonny Carson with Sly, you know, who played Little Joe Dance in the education of Sonny Carson, right? And I can say Ben and them, who was on the front line of when Sonny Carson was supposed to get initiated. I can go back with Miss Alberta, who had a major part in the education of Sonny Carson. So these brothers and sisters who I grew up with, which know me, when I say Crown Heights, I can say Jackie, right? I can say Denise, I could say Sherry, I could say different people who played an integral part in my life then. So I developed, as Jackie would say, a reputation, whereas I didn't take no shit from nobody, but I didn't disrespect nobody. I had my beefs. I didn't win all of them, but most of them I did win. I'm not braggadocious.
I like that.
But
I like that.
Along.
Stop. I like that. You know how many people would have sat here and made it seem like they won every fight they ever had.
Nah, you know what I'm saying?
Like, let's keep it 100. Like, you cannot win every fight. You have to lose a couple fight for you to be good and be better at, you know, whatever you was doing and you was fighting. So people need to stop that trying to always, oh, I was the best at this and the best at. No, you was not. So go ahead. I love the
fact. I held mines, and one of the things that I held, like, you know,
but
even
I respect
that. But
see,
the thing
is
that you lost some
and you win them. Yeah.
How you said, you know, you learned how to fight for me. And these are one of the things that I, you know, aspire to do. I have taught a lot of brothers and sisters different things. I have so many sisters and brothers that grew up with me and say, you know, you taught me this. And I'm not realizing that I did. Mm-hmm. Because I can say for a fact and certainty, at that time, I was very mature for my age. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people didn't think that I was the age that I was. Well, I thought you was much older. Mm-hmm. Nah, because I gravitated towards older people. Mm-hmm. You know, and when I say older people, that cipher
right.
was much experienced and it was much laid back.
Right.
So this is why when I hung out, and I did hang out.
But we were pretty big, though. I wasn't
happy. Oh, yeah.
No,
we were.
You're pretty
absolutely.
Big for your age.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So we looked
absolutely.
Older than we were.
And, but we carried ourselves different.
Exactly.
You know, what
exactly.
do you look at a 16-year-old... a 15-year-old brother driving a car.
Exactly.
You know, like, it's his, but it's stolen.
Right.
You know
you
what
know,
I'm saying?
I
and riding around, like, you know, we
like
own it.
Like, 18, 19, like, it's like, you can really do that. And sometimes when I look back, and I do be telling myself in my mind, I said, damn, Jackie, you was really 14 and 15 doing these things that people do when they was, like, 20 and 30.
You see, but that's what I'm saying. Your energy was a whole lot different from a lot of other sisters. See, you wasn't out there, you know, like you would say, entertaining guys. You wasn't out there. You wasn't like that. And this is the attraction. And like I said, meeting you, it wasn't like, yo, let me try to hit Jackie. No. I love your presentation as a woman, as a young woman at that time. Thank not even you. Knowing your age, but you had a presentation. And it was an aura, like you would say, me had that respect. You had that respect with the sisters that was hanging out with you. Mm-hmm. So they basically was hanging out with you. And, you know, it wasn't like, yo, you heard this story, you heard that story. And they was doing crazy, ratchet shit. No, it wasn't even like that. Yeah. And this was
79. So this was way before the hoopla, like I said, I know when being in PS167, by the time I was in the third grade going into fourth grade, this is elementary school, my name was hitting the airwaves on the goddamn microphone.
Absolutely.
Jackie Rowe, please report to the main office. So it was, you know, when people don't understand, it's like you have to be that person that brings something about you organically that people want to be around. And you said that you saw something in me, and I didn't even know what I was doing because I had just lost my father and mm-hmm. my older sister. Mm-hmm. So at that age, I'm talking my 8, 9, 10. Now, my father died when I was 8. My sister died when I was 9. So my father died in 72. My sister died in 73. By this time, I'm lost. You know what I mean? I'm still trying to figure out life and death. And I tell the story all the time. Like, it is like a whole world that you don't understand when you don't know where somebody's been in your life for 8 years disappears to. And you trying to, somebody trying to tell you, oh, this person is gone, he's never coming back. You like, what? Mm-hmm. And that person is like your best friend. You know what I mean? You look forward to seeing him every day. It's a joy. Daddy. And you know, I hear girls talk about it now, but people don't really understand the faucet and that whole, you know, bond that you have when you have a father that loves you unconditionally, and then you just see him just at his demise. That's it. That's, he's never coming back. Those things have messed up your head. And the next person that was close to me was his daughter from a different previous marriage, which was my oldest sister. I got a lot of her ways too, because she was known in the Jamaican culture in the early 70s and whatever, this and that. And she was a voluptuous lady, but she was, you know, very sexy and very pretty. And then she would always come and get me because she lived in Queens for me to babysit her kids, them, which was my nephew, Amory, Karen, and Sly. And then she gets killed. I'm sitting there watching TV, and I see the old two women got shot in their head on Montgomery and Utica Avenue. And I'm looking real good, and I said, Cherry Virgo. I said, Ma, to my mom, I said, Ma, I think that's, you know, my sister. So that, all that messed me up and threw me out in the jungle, in the streets, because I was lost. Mm-hmm. I was lost. Mm-hmm. And then I still was emotionally just, you know, walking around like I had sense, but I really didn't even know. I had a hate that I wanted to kill everybody, to be honest, because I didn't understand. I was angry. I was frustrated. But I'm glad that people noticed that I still carried myself a certain way. Only when you mess with me, you would feel my wrath. Mm-hmm. If you came to me, hey, how you doing? I would still answer you, hey, how you doing? We kept it moving. But my whole intentions of how I was looking at life, like what's going on? And no one in my home could answer, so that's why I ran to the streets.
Yeah, but see, even when you say you ran to the streets under everything that you was experiencing, you didn't run into nothing negative.
Nah, not at all.
Get you caught at
all.
You run into positive energy, and a lot of us didn't know what you was going through until you started speaking about your life experience. Even to the day, you start speaking about it, you get emotional because this is something that real to you. So we have pretenders who say that, you know, I'm a father. We have pretenders who say I'm a mother, but you're not diligent in your responsibility as a father or a mother. So you had that, but it was for a short period of time. So when you lose that, you can either act out or act in. Mm-hmm. And you decide to act in. You stay within your life cipher. Your life cipher is like, hey, don't fuck with me. I'm not going to fuck with you. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give you no negative energy as long as you don't give me no negative energy.
Still the same way at 60 years
and
old.
Absolutely. So when you presented yourself such as, and like I said, meeting you, and this is what was attracted me to you, and it was a whole, excuse me, it's the pollen. It's a whole lot of positive people who were in my life. As we can say today, mm-hmm. we can say we had interventions.
Right.
People who meant something to us mm-hmm. and still mean something to us that are living. Mm-hmm. And even with the memories that we have of them, it still shines through on us. Mm-hmm. So that part of me was exuded to you, and I received it from you, and I received it from other people. Like I can say, I know Cheryl and them. I know these people because I grew up with them. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really hang out with them, but hey, Jackie closed that gap. So, hey, Kim, I know you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the gap got closed. Cheryl, I know you. I know your brothers. I remember when they moved from Crown to Brownsville. Mm-hmm. When they was one of the family right there in Marcus Garvey Project. Mm-hmm. See, when I talk about things like this, people get flashback like, oh, like if I talk about Daryl and them, I say, yo, remember we was in Albany Park and we was Sly Slugging and Justice and them? Damn, man, you going back to 74. Yeah, because mm-hmm. this is how far we go back.
Exactly.
So if I say to somebody, I say, listen, I know Pappy Mason. What y'all hear, that's not true. Mm-hmm. I know his mother. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? It's a difference. And I was locked up doing these guys so-called reign mm-hmm. in this business, what they consider business. You mm-hmm. understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I can say, I know this person. No, he's right. not like that.
Right.
See, you dudes wasn't built like that. Mm-hmm. He was built like that. So that's the cloth that I know that I come up under.
Yeah, you
know? And I was never the type of dude that would say, yo, yeah, man, this motherfucker did this, that, and the third. So one of the things that I had picked up was a hate from like the 71st precinct. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, like the brothers used to be around, we'd be standing on the corner of the building. The police would come, yo, I need some guys to get in the lineup. A couple of times, the dudes would get in the car to go to a lineup. And then I'm like, yo, man, stop doing that. Don't do that shit. You going in the lineup to the precinct, but you're not getting a picture back. So this is how they set up a photo array. Mm-hmm. So you would say,
they wasn't getting their pictures back.
They wasn't getting the picture back. They give you $5. They pay you $5 for the mm-hmm, picture, but mm-hmm. they setting it up for a photo array mm.
for future
mugshots.
Cases or anything right. that nigga put
so,
in.
But
explain that part to them when you say that, because a lot of people don't
see,
understand
what
you
happens
take the
is
pictures.
This. All right, brothers be young. At that time, a lot of brothers was young. So, you know, back then, weed was $3 a bag. You know, dudes get a bag of weed. Mm-hmm. So
this is when herb reefer
was marijuana.
Yeah, marijuana was $3. We used to call them tray bags.
Tray bags, that's right. Mm-hmm. So what happened was that whether it's the guards or whether it's anybody we stand on the corner, the police would come and say, yo, I need some brothers to come with me to the precinct for a lineup. Dudes would jump in the car and do this. You know, because they're getting $5. At that time, mm-hmm. you got to remember, mm-hmm. some of them cats didn't have nothing. $5 was a lot of money. Y'all can get me a tray bag of weed,
right.
go to the liquor store, get me a bottle of wine,
right.
and
right.
I'm good.
Right.
Not that they was, you know, strictly, you know, drug addicts, but this is what's like, you know, they didn't know no
right.
better. So, being in that element, and like I said, like if we talk about Skeeter, and we talk about Derek, and we talk about Nesto, and all these dudes, Nat and all these dudes, I was in that cypher with Romeo. You know, I was in that cypher with Foots. I was in that cypher of knowing. It's not mm-hmm. like, oh, I heard of you. No, I know these cats. So my thing was, I was a little older than the brothers that I was hanging out with, and I was telling them things, and I was putting them on things.
And
like,
you was putting them on about the
right.
picture. Don't do the pictures, because when
right.
you didn't get the picture back, you go in and you're trying to get this little money because you need a little bit of money to do your thing, but you didn't get back your picture. So when you took your picture, you being set up for any type of crime
future.
That happened.
Future
they could
crime.
Use your picture as a mugshot to put you
Absolutely.
With it.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned someone's name, because I was going to say something, but I want you to hold that thought, pin it right there. I want you to come back to that. When you mentioned Nesto, that was another person, I'm saying, the pimps. This is a pimp you just mentioned. And
yeah.
these are dudes that were pimping. And that's another thing to always be laughing. I said, yo, I was thrown right out there on the court. I lived one block from the Hostro,
right.
Rochester. And I was like,
Lincoln Terrace.
Right, Lincoln Terrace. I'm saying, like, you know what I'm saying? I used to be sitting there. I used to see people. Like, I used to be wondering, some of the homegirls. I was like, yo, what you doing over there? Oh, nothing. Mind your business, little girl. I never knew what mm-hmm. they were doing. They were mm-hmm. selling butt. I was like, okay. But even that, as I was thrown out into that avenue of trying to figure out what was life about, I never even went into that. I just end up hanging out with the pimps and hoes. Like my first bid, first time I got arrested, I was thrown in Skidmore Court. I was thrown in the jail with the prostitute.
Mm.
And I remember the prostitute, like, what you doing in here, little girl? I said, none of your fucking business. You know, oh, you little badass. Huh? You got a smart mouth. But I end up learning something from her when I was in, and I always say this, and it's so funny, I'm gonna let you go back. She taught me the difference of being a hoe and being a straight girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? She said, I get paid for selling my ass. Straight girls give it away. And mm-hmm. I said, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I said, what you mean by that? And so that always stood in my head. So even though I was going into these little situations, I was getting little jewels from my little mm-hmm. experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what makes me stand out, because I listened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of times when I tell even my grandson, even though people used to tell you, and you know, I was a badass, so I know my mother had a hard time raising me and stuff, but people don't listen. They don't listen. Like, you know, I took a lot of L's in life, and as I looked at them, I learned from a lot of ups. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, okay. So go ahead. I want you to tell them.
So you see, when you say like Nestor and them dudes was pimps, these dudes became pimps middle 80s and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason why I can say that, because I know their history, and a lot of their history, like I said, we come through the Jolly Stompers. And, you know, Nestor was basically like a pretty boy. He just had a bunch of girls, and it was me, Nestor, and Romeo, American, Black, a Jamaican, and a Panamanian, which Nestor's Panamanian, Romeo's Jamaican, I'm American, Black. And we basically all grew up together, and like I can say, me, Nestor, and Michael, who's my brother's down south, he's a pastor now, but we basically grew up together. And when we got knowledge itself, our three firstborns, Nestor firstborn is Shaquana, Michael firstborn is Shakima, my firstborn is Shaquem. So we always named our firstborn Sha. My name was Melhar, Michael's name was Sha, and I forget Nestor's name at the time, but he was just, you know, pretty boy, whatever. We was driving cars and things of that nature, hanging out. But then, you know, different elements came in, because you can remember we had a weed house on Lefferts in Albany, right across the street from Albany Park. And it wasn't like a hole in the wall. It was an apartment where it was furnished. It wasn't like, you know, just a regular spot somebody just selling weed out of. So we did our little thing. We hung out and whatnot. And for me, from that, I didn't really like that. So I moved away from that, and I stayed with a lot of brothers with visiting the Nation of Gods and Earth, which is a lot of brothers that you seen me around, and you know how they were. And in that, you know, I developed, as some people would say, this no-nonsense type of reputation. Well, basically, you can't come in our cipher, meaning that area, and do anything, because we're going to defend it.
Right.
And there was a couple of brothers that would defend it like I would defend it, but a lot of them come to learn, like you interviewed my brother Positive, you know, and we go a long way back, you know, inside and outside. I mean, outside and inside, but the story
Paul
was
Clark.
Told, Paul Clark, absolutely. So the story was told as to, like, you know, okay, most of my arrest at that time was dealing with the 71st Precinct. And as you would say, I had a reputation. Yeah, I had a reputation because, like I said, I fought, won some, lost some. No nonsense. No, fuck the police. Leave the police alone. Don't get in the police car. Don't do this and so forth and so on. So this case come to me. And a lot
of people, this is why we're here. So I don't want everybody to get confused. So the reason why we did all this backstory is to show the history of our relationship as far as it go. But the main reason why he's here is to share his story. That is a story that a lot of people probably heard of if you was in the 70s, 80s. He got arrested for shooting a Jew on Eastern Parkway.
Montgomery.
Well, still Crown Heights, right?
Crown Heights.
And so this is the person that, if you remember hearing anyone that listens to this podcast, the young man that was charged, I think he was the first young man that was charged
with a murder.
With a murder for killing a Jew, a Jewish person back in
1979.
So this is why we was doing the history of who we are and why we're so close, because he really is a big brother to me. I know I said about a lot of, well, I don't really said about a lot of people, but he is one of these living legend men's that I'm interviewing right now. And this is a really deep, in-depth interview and conversation that I've been waiting to have, because his story is so profound, and he's here sitting right now in my office so we can have this conversation. So the backstory that you got was our relationship to show you how close we are. So please, now you can tell them the story.
Even in that presentation, as you said, you know, the background is basically what it was, even when you said that the type of individual I was, and
led up to this whole thing.
And like I said, you know, when you're young and you really don't know, and you educate yourself to the point where you have understanding, you see how corrupt the police were, you know, especially the 71st precinct or the 77th or the 75th, all these precincts, you see how corrupt they were. So with me having what you would consider a bully type of reputation, but I can say it was militancy, because coming up in the Nation of Gods and Earth, this is what we were. We were young
disciplined.
Militant, and we was disciplined in that. In the Nation of Gods and Earth at that time, in our culture, we was disciplined.
There you go.
In our studies, and in where we carried ourselves. Because like I said, even being part of that, going back, when you come to my parties, it was God's cipher is divine. Mm-hmm. And that's how my parties was. You know, I used to play the music and whatnot. Mm-hmm. People say, yo, you used to DJ? Yeah, it's the DJ music. And I used to have house parties, you know, get an apartment and
those were the best.
And have some nice parties. Mm-hmm. And then every now and then you had a couple of knuckleheads, you know, we had to put them out. You was there a couple of times.
Yeah,
I had to do
people
that.
People get drunk and get crazy, yeah.
But so saying all that put me on the path of interruption in my life for a crime that I served 31 years for that I didn't commit.
That part.
Now, some people who knew me at the time, they could take it in their mind and say, yeah, Mel, I probably did it, you know, because of. And that's what they perceive, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, certain individual that was in that cipher, one in particular individual, Riley, and some other brothers, they was plotting to do something to a Jew. And as you know me, I know a lot of the Jews in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I know some of the JDLs, who was the Jewish defense lead at that time. Mm-hmm. And I used to sell them weed.
They used
to come around, I used to sell them weed. But when this case happened, which happened October 25th, 1979, my birthday. I was in Queens with my daughter's mother celebrating my birthday. And then, you know, transitioned back to Brooklyn that morning. Of course, at the time, I was living with my son's mother, but my daughter's mother was living out in Queens. And yeah, you know, we did our little thing, you know, baby mama here, baby mama there, but it was respect because I took care of my kids. It wasn't like I didn't. I didn't have the opportunity to really nurture my daughter. Mm-hmm. I had 2 years to nurture my son. Mm-hmm. My daughter was only a couple of months old before I was removed from the street for this crime that I did not commit. So saying all that, what led that to me, I believe, like you would say, was the reputation. Mm-hmm. And the police like, hey, well, you know what? Maybe we can get this joker. Mm-hmm. You know?
Going back to those mugshots again, what they would come and take. But you wasn't ever a part of that.
No,
but we were alluding to their structure of how they did business.
Absolutely. Okay. But if you do recall, I don't know if you recall, prior to this case, I had got arrested for shooting somebody in 565. Mm. The guy had stabbed me. Because I used to sell weed. Right. And the dude had stabbed me. Because he tried to beat me for some weed. He took the weed out of the bag and put dirt in the bag and tried to give it back.
Right. So that's how it led to your arrest.
Right.
So
no, that's one of the...
Right. That's what led to that earlier arrest. So they got aware of who you were. See?
Right.
Exactly.
Right. So now when this case come up, it's like, okay, they try to pinpoint me to the case. And, you know, hey, listen, I got nothing to do with it. Had nothing to do with it. Well, you know, okay, whatever. So now I go through the dilemma of, the case that I just spoke on, where I shot somebody, I got a warrant for that case. That's an open warrant case. Mm-hmm. So when the case happened with the Jewish rabbi, I'm like, well, you got nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. But when the police started, you know, mentioning my name, where did my name come from? I don't know. But when they finally contact me through my sister and they wanted to talk to me. So my sister gave me the number. I called the police. Yo, what's up? What you want to talk to me? Oh, no, come to the precinct. Why would I come to the precinct?
And what precinct was that again?
The 71st precinct. Mm-hmm. Knowing that I didn't have nothing to do with the rabbi's murder. I know I didn't do it.
Right, because
I didn't
you were somewhere else.
I was somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But I know that I got an open warrant. Mm-hmm. So why would I walk into an open warrant? Mm-hmm. So now, so this is October 25th. So out their time, they doing an investigation, whatever. You know, they talking to this, you know...
October 25th, 1979.
Mm-hmm. So they got this collaborating liar working with them and, you know, trying to point the finger at me. So they wind up arresting me November 14th, 1979. And when they arrest me for the warrant. Right? So when they arrest me for the warrant, I'm like, yo, I know I ain't had nothing to do with this case. I volunteered for a lineup. What guilty person would volunteer for a lineup not knowing who, if anybody, seen you commit this crime?
Right.
I volunteer for a lie detector test. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. I did all these things. Mm-hmm. So now, what do? They talk to me. They question me. I don't know nothing about it.
How old were you again?
I was 19 at the time. Mm-hmm. I just turned 19. I don't know nothing about this. I had nothing to do with it. That's it. So now, I go in, as I said, for the warrant. That's all they can arrest me for.
Right.
Well, I wind up getting back out. So during their little so-called interview of me, they mentioned that this guy, Darryl Brown, who's Riley, who's supposed to be my air-like self, part of the Nation of Gods and Earth, was talking to them about me. So I'm trying to figure out how the police know where I live at. So it was like maybe three different people who knew where I live at. So when I approached them three, one by one, the only one that got defensive was Raleigh. So now I know that you actually talking to him. So I said, yo, man, keep my name out your mouth. And he tried to get smart, so I slapped the shit out of him. Yo, listen, I don't care what you do. Keep my name out your mouth. I ain't had nothing to do with this case. And if you know at the time when this man was killed, it was some serious shit. The police was going around, you know, knocking on different people's doors and different things of that nature and picking up any and everybody. Yeah, it was going to their snitches. Right. It was going to their snitches and everything. Yo, what do you got? What do you know? Nobody.
Because it made the news. This was worldwide. This is one of the biggest cases.
Right. Ever. You had the governor, the mayor, everybody was involved. But everybody that they went to, nobody, they snitches and anybody, the informants that they had on the books back then, said that, you know, I didn't hear Mel Hart did it. Only one person said that. That was this motherfucker. And how, like I said,
this motherfucker named Raleigh.
Raleigh, Darrell Brown. How it came to this motherfucker here was that when they was searching the area, they went into 565, you know, the building, and they went to a vacant apartment. They found some of the stuff that belonged to him, you know, Book of Life and all this other stuff with his name on it, Darrell Brown. Know that he go to Wingate High School, so they go up to Wingate, find out who he is. So they start talking to him around the 26th of October. I didn't know these things until later on. You know, when you were locked up, you do your research, you know, you do your law, you know, everything that you do to get yourself up out of it. So I started learning more things. But I know that he was the one that was talking to him. He's the one that got on the stand and said that he seen me shoot and kill this man. But throughout my time of incarceration, you learn a lot. You learn how to do the law. You learn how to do a lot of things. But going back a little bit about this dude, and when he was talking to him, whether they gave him my name or he gave him my name, there was a history of this dude and another dude named Shabazz. They was plotting to rob a Jew, because this is what they was doing. Most of them in that time back then, their actions was burglary. Nobody was into, yo, leave the fucking Jews alone. Everybody was into burglaries. Everybody had their little hustle. They're selling weeds and shit like that. No, that's what it was. Yeah. Robbing the cribs. You know, you go get the jewelry. This is what we did.
Right.
We didn't stick up no Jew, rob no Jew. We didn't do no shit like that. How many stores that we can go in and like, yo, popo, and get shit on credit or whatever it was? We ain't did no, who stuck up any of the stores?
Nobody.
On Utica Avenue. Who did any of that? Nobody did none of that stuff because we had
relationships
with the peoples, right? So coming back to this joker, he went along with whatever what they wanted him to go along with to implicate me. And like I tell people, they say, yo, Raleigh ratted on Mel Hart. Raleigh didn't rat on Mel Hart. Raleigh lied on Mel Hart. Raleigh know that he lied on me.
That's the difference between ratting. That's what I'm saying.
Raleigh know that he lied on me. It ain't like, you know, this, that, and the third. And I can say this with my lawyer. I can say it to you. I slap you. This is why you went along with this shit, because I slap you. But I should have knew better than fuck with you when I seen that you burglarized your own father. You robbed your own father. Who stopped your father from whooping your ass right there on Troy and Carroll Street? I did. When your father came and kicked you in the side of your motherfucking head. So I had a reputation with him, like we can hang out. I hung out with his brother. I know his mother. I know all of them. You know, but why would you lie on me? Was it the $1,000 or was it the slap in the face? But he went along with this plot and I wound up getting convicted. You know, I
wound up getting trial.
I took it to trial. Hell yeah. I'm going to take it to trial because I know I didn't do it.
Right. Okay.
And like I said.
But I want the audience to know all of this too.
As I said to you, when they picked me up for a warrant and questioned me about the homicide, which I like, listen, I had nothing to do with it. I wasn't there. And that's the story you're going to get. And that's the truth. So when you release me, I confront this joker once I find out who he was. And this is how the story go. So from October 25th to November 30th, 1979, that's when they arrested me. The day that's the day that they arrested me. I wasn't running from the police after that, because now I can talk to you, but I wasn't going to volunteer and come into the precinct knowing that I got an open warrant case.
But
I'm not ready to go to jail. Let me go to jail on my own for my own warrant. And then what happened when they arrested me for the warrant? I wound up getting out anyway. But I wasn't going to volunteer coming in. You want to talk to me? We talking on the phone. So we talking on the phone. And I said, no, we got to talk to you. So unbeknownst to me at that time, this joker was still talking to the police about me. And like you would say, I take it to trial. Some people have their opinion. Mm-hmm. Oh, yo, he did it. He did that, this, that, and the third. Sis, how long? You was in contact with me throughout my incarceration. Mm-hmm. You were sending me birthday cards. I was sending you birthday. From this apartment, from then, back mm-hmm. then, mm-hmm. 87, 88. Mm-hmm. And here it is. I'm 8 years into my bed. Mm-hmm. And
not I'm this saying, apartment, the other apartment.
But, you know,
yeah.
the same building, yeah, right? Right? But we still in touch. I'm still in touch with people who know me. And those who know me say, yo, I know you.
Right.
I know you didn't do that. You had other people like you just say, man, fuck that nigga. That's man, you did it. Mm-hmm. This is what a lot of dudes do. Like I right. said, speaking on brothers that I just spoke on and people don't know their history, mm-hmm. they just know their history from when they came Hearsay. Up with this dude mm-hmm. during the '80s and they was out there getting this money. Like when I seen Ruff at your sister's funeral, we could go back and we could talk mm-hmm. Jolly Stompers.
Right.
And see, when people talk like that, you know, I know that, man, you don't know him.
Right.
I know him. I right. grew up with him. I know his mother. What mm-hmm. do you know about his mother? You don't know his mother.
And Ruff is a good close with Poppy Mason.
Right, but this is what I'm saying to you. Right. So when people say this, I can go back Jolly Stomper days. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say, when I say people know me, so, you know, you don't like me, yeah, fuck that motherfucker. Yeah, they got him, so forth mm-hmm. and so on. But as I said to you, throughout the police mm-hmm. and their investigation, none of their informants, none of their snitches mm-hmm. that they had on the books at that time said, yeah, Melhart did it. You understand mm-hmm. what I'm saying? You only had two jokers. The two jokers who was plotting to rob a Jew mm-hmm. to say that, yeah, Melhart committed this crime. But it had nothing to do with me. And when they tried to inform me of them wanting to rob a Jew, my first thing to them was, yo, you can't do that. Why would you rob a Jew? Especially on Kingston Avenue between Crown and Carroll, you're not getting away. Mm-hmm. So that's their story. That's the story. Now, the truth of the matter, with this case that cost me 31 years of my life, and I've been fighting it for the last, matter of fact, for the whole 45, mm-hmm. since mm-hmm. the case came into existence, 45 years now, I've been fighting this case. And as you would say, this is why we're here today, to speak about the history that me and you have, but what part of the history that have cost me 31 years of my life for something that I didn't do. And to this day, I'm still fighting it, you know, still trying to prove that, you know, I was wrongfully convicted. And it's been a struggle, but it's been a fight. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the fight, you know, and I'm not one of these individuals that say, oh, you know, you did that. No, let me say something to you. I'm going to continue to fight this until I win.
And what are you doing right now to fight this case?
Right now, I have an attorney who's working with me, and we're in the process of doing a 440 motion, which is for newly discovered evidence. And I say newly discovered evidence because there's so many things that came out in this case that a lot of people don't know.
Like?
And some of the things that came out recently discovered, which the district attorney didn't turn over this evidence, was there was other suspects in this case before they even thought about me. Oh, there was other people who fitted this profile.
Of course.
They fitted this profile. They picked these people up. They informants even said, yo, this person did this. You understand what I'm saying? Before me. But they were set on, yo, let's get Melhart. And we got this lying piece of shit that's going to solidify it. Nothing to connect me to this case. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No fingerprints, no gun, nothing but Raleigh's testimony. That's it.
All right, so let's talk about the police officers. Are these the same two police officers that actually are affiliated with a lot of stuff that was going on?
Well, Scarcelli, Louis Scarcelli, who he was in Bush case, a lot of other brothers' cases. He was considered the Prince of New York City, one of these corrupt cops. Mm-hmm. One of his first case that he worked on was my case. Mm-hmm. What do he know about this case? We don't know. We're still trying to figure out what role did he play.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's still alive. This motherfucker got his own podcast and shit.
Get out of here.
Man, dude is a piece of shit. He done sent so many brothers and sisters to jail.
Wow.
He's a piece of shit. But this is what I'm telling you. His first case that he worked on, I don't know how much in depth he was in my case, because mm-hmm. my lawyers, we still trying to get this motherfucker to talk. Mm-hmm. But you see what happened with Bush and a lot of other brother cases that mm-hmm. this motherfucker was involved in? These cases was overturned.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Sure
they was overturned. But one of the first cases that he was part of the investigation in was mine. He was part of the anti-crime unit out of the 71st precinct. Mm-hmm. He was part of that crew. So now the other Joker, Thomas Sarantino and Frank Rizzi, they come out of the 12th homicide zone, which was at that time the 69th precinct. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when I say to you, I learned some shit and I've been fighting it. If you notice, I've been on different podcasts. I did different interviews. Yes. I spoke to did my interview with you a while ago. As I told you, I was in the process of, you know, putting this case together. Mm-hmm. And I know that your podcast is we going to the people, and the right. people who know me, this is what you need to hear.
Right.
You think what I'm saying? Like, people say, yeah, like, you know, you, Riley, can y'all grew up together? Yeah, I know his mother before she passed away. I know his mm-hmm. sisters. I know mm-hmm. his brother. Me and his brother used to run around university. We used to play ball together. And, like, even when the brother started speaking, I said, yo, man, talk to your brother. Your brother, you know, what is he doing?
Is he still alive, Riley?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Riley's still alive. Mm-hmm. He's still alive. I know where he live at and all that, you know. But I'm trying to get this motherfucker to tell the truth. Just tell
right.
the truth.
Right, right.
What can they do to you? They can't
so
do
nothing
to you.
So have your attorneys reached out to him?
Yes. They reached out to him, but he refused. Even the CRU, which is the Conviction Review Unit, you mm-hmm. have to go through them in Kings County, they try to reach out to him. He's like, yo, get the fuck away from me. I don't want to talk. This, that, and the third. Mm. But we are pushing with our 440 to get to him, mm-hmm. to get him on the stand, to see, you know, how you would react with my attorney. Because you can run and duck and hide all mm-hmm. you want. Like I said, you know, his sisters and all of them, they're going to believe him. That's your brother. I'm not trying to tell you not to believe your brother. I'm trying to tell you to tell your brother to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. Because your brother lied on me. What was his reason for lying
and
on me?
And took 31 either, years out of
absolutely,
your life.
Absolutely. Either you committed the crime or you lied on me for $1,000 and slapping the shit out of you. Now, mm-hmm. which one is it?
And what is a 440?
A 440 is a motion that you put in for newly discovered evidence. Mm-hmm. You know, so the newly discovered evidence that we have uncovered is evidence where, like, you know, the prosecutor made a deal with this motherfucker mm-hmm. on numerous occasions. The ineffective system for counsel, because my lawyer didn't do a good fucking job. Mm-hmm. He didn't do shit. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I wound up doing the kind of time that I did.
Wow.
But in my pursuit throughout that time, I have been reaching out to different attorneys and, like I said, studying law, doing different things. And a lot of times, you know, you would get an opening, you know, as far as investigator or lawyer, but the door would be closed. Mm-hmm. So what do? You continue to fight. You can't give up. Okay. I went to 4 parole boards.
Before
I came home. At each parole board I went to, I always maintained my innocence. Mm-hmm. I didn't show no remorse or anything. I could show compassion mm-hmm. for the rabbi's family as well as my family. Mm-hmm. But I know that the rabbi know that the last person face that he seen before he was killed was in mine.
Okay.
I know that as an actual fact. You know, so you put in this motion, the 440 motion, is saying, well, listen, this is what you'd like to do. But first and foremost, you get an attorney who's interested in seeing justice served in the case. Mm-hmm. And when you have an attorney like the one I have that's interested in seeing justice, mm-hmm. he's going to fight for you. And this mm-hmm. is what the brother did. He's doing that for me. I consider him my brother, you know.
Right,
and
I'm
it's
sure.
not because of the pigmentation or anything like that, because mm-hmm. he is a white guy. He's a mm-hmm. young Irish dude.
But he believed in you.
But he believed in
that.
It's like
you.
I have,
that's all
I have
you
a
need
Jewish
is someone
woman.
To believe in you.
I have mm-hmm. a Jewish woman right around here, Alice Byrne. She worked with me the same way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she did the best that she could before she transitioned. But what I'm saying is that when you have somebody that believe in you and fighting for you, you got to go with them.
Right.
Even though my family, you may know, yeah, listen, I'm going with my brother. I understand that, mm-hmm. you know, but here's actual facts. Here's evidence that can say
proof
that this brother didn't do this crime.
Right.
So I'm just looking to exonerate myself mm-hmm. so that I can go and live in my life.
But what do you want to get back from the 31 years that you can't get back? What's the message to this?
The message is vindication. And the mm-hmm. thing that I want to express to anybody, so you have had, like I said, you had Bush here. You had positive here. Mm-hmm. And the second case that Paz would tell you, he didn't do the second case. Mm-hmm. That's an actual fact. Mm-hmm. Bush case, he didn't do. And the story that's never been really told or expressed is that when we do these times for crimes that we know that we didn't commit, mm-hmm. you have these prosecutors, you have these crooked cops, mm-hmm. that nothing ever happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So now we can suffer the consequences mm-hmm. of these wrongful convictions. Mm-hmm. And what are the consequences? You go to prison. I'm accused of killing Jackie. Jackie's son is in jail. Mm-hmm. I didn't kill Jackie, but Jackie's son, yeah, that motherfucker mm-hmm. killed my mom. and do me in or do me dirty.
Right.
But now come to find out, it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And we know that this has happened throughout the history when these wrongful convictions come up. So when brothers go to prison for these type of crimes and they are vindicated and they exonerated, these are the stories that need to be told.
Right.
Because the family still need closure because you had a crooked cop and a crooked DA who put somebody in prison for a crime that they know that didn't do it. But yet, for 31 years or 40 years, however long we have served that time, you've been living a lavish life.
Yes.
Knowing this. Knowing this.
That you put innocent kids in jail.
But hold up. Now, check our history. Look how these motherfuckers hung some of our people back in the days. If you even go back to Emmett Till and before that, wrongful accusation, lies, have cost a lot of our people their lives. When we start talking about the Black Wall Street, stuff like that, a lie cost our people, their community. So a so-called heir-like self of mine, a brother that was supposed to have been a brother to me, he's going to lie on me for what? Because I slap you for $1,000? Are you fucking serious? Are you fucking serious? So,
but
when
those
I look
was
for
the era, those is the time, because like you said, everybody's just not built and cut like us. You see, like, you know, my story, I came from a devastated background. I got in the air, you know, out into the airs of just, you know, everybody out in the street scrambling in the 70s, you know what I mean? Just trying to find my way. It didn't lead me to do anything to hurt anybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, I still stood my ground. Even though I was hurt and I was in pain, I still maintained, you know, my composure. You was a person that was out there doing your thing. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people didn't like you. A lot of people didn't, you know, respect you or whatever the case may be. And people out there just see people and just don't understand their story. But quick, fast to throw you in a fucking cross and don't even know that, damn, like, you know, what am I doing? Why? Because I don't like that person? Because that person, you know, fucked me up or that person slapped me or whatever? I'm going to do this to that person. It's a lot of people just not built like that.
But see, that's the thing that I said when I was talking to you earlier about our history, and I say positive energy. You know, and one of the things that Paul Clark Positive told me, we was in Comstock, I think this was about 82, 83, and we was locking next door to each other. And he was telling me, like, yo, man, you know the motherfuckers you was hanging out, the motherfuckers is punks, them dudes is cowards. I was like, yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I know, I knew that then. Mm-hmm. But the gravitational pull for me, for them, was to elevate them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, within the nation of God and earth, we had our ciphers we built. And as I said, you participated in some of that. I had fun with a lot of these brothers. Not all of them was bad. You know, not all of them was bad, but you come to learn about some of these cats and some of the shit that they be saying. And some of the brothers that I could say to you that, hey, I grew up with and we became so-called enemies, but we was like frenemies like that because we still got along, you know. And when we went to prison, yo, you was with the cat in the RRC, you was with the God body, but we from Brooklyn. We gonna stick together. And that's how it was. That's how it was. So a lot of brothers that you might see me with that you know on different scale, we still can get along. Even though we had beef, you try to shoot me, I try to shoot you, but we still get along.
In those jails, we got to come together.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And this is what I say to people about, you don't know the story. See, you heard the story, but you don't know the story. I can put feet to ground and say, yo, I was there.
Right.
I'm not a braggadocious type of individual. Right. I can say, yo, I did time with this individual. I did time with this individual. Me and this individual, we did this, we did that, and so forth and so on. We vibe.
Right.
We went to, you know, we went to Rogers Island. We was on Rogers Island. We got our weed. We hung out. But we had a history from the streets.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people, not to cut you, that's doing that same dumb shit right now. They going around taking people's stories and act like they was there, and knowing that the people that was there know that you know and I know that you wasn't there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And then another thing too, you know, what I look at from us, you know what I'm saying? There we go again, like being out in the street and just, you know, trying to find our way. Some of us get caught up in a lot of different shit that ain't got nothing to do with us. But one thing we did know when we got into that jail cell, you know what I'm saying? I'm speaking on your term too. Even if I was in there, I know if I heard somebody from BK, we community. We bonded. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Just like I heard with Paul Clark. Everybody that speaks to that, I know. We don't sit there and go old Flatbush and over Brooklyn. Mm-mm. No, no. We even though it's the same area, but we going to stick with our borough. You know what I'm saying? We going to stick with our community. Whatever we came from, we going to stick with that. And that's what people need to learn.
But see, even in that, when you say, which is a true statement, people wasn't built like that because we had brothers. We grew up in Brownsville, but I hang out in Crown Heights. I grew up in Crown Heights, but I hang out in Queensbridge. I grew up in Flatbush, but I hang out in the Bronx.
Right.
So we got along. Those who us wanted to venture out. Mm-hmm. I wasn't just, yo, Crown Street, this, that. No, 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 no. Mm-hmm. I'll go anywhere because you roll with me. Yo, let's go to Brownsville. We from Brownsville. Right. We went everywhere
yeah.
because the energy that we presented, mm-hmm. and it was negative shit going on around us, but right. we came here for a reason. Right. We came here to have a good time, and that's what we did, and we left. We never got caught up in any beefs and things of that nature. Like, I was telling my wife the other day, this is so funny how we look at social media. Mm-hmm. And social media captivates so much shit. And we look at things now as being tragic. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong. When you got in some fights, you mm-hmm. put the Vaseline on your face, mm-hmm. let me go do my thing. Mm-hmm. And they say, yo, fuck that bitch up. Fuck mm-hmm. up. Right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference to today? They videotape
them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The mamas would come out there, you better beat that bitch ass. Yeah, they yeah. doing it now, but they mm-hmm. videotaping it. So when you look at it, it's mm-hmm. a different time. So now they portraying us right. today through social media mm-hmm. as savages.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, we still was like, yo, I'm going to see Jackie in the fight. Yo, rip her shit off. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can get your little glorification of seeing her. Mm-hmm. But you wasn't doing the shit that they was doing now.
Mm-hmm.
So now you look at things as, you can say, evolution.
Mm-hmm.
But the evolution as well. How is it being portrayed? Okay, so
that
when
part.
You that's the fucked up part. Mm-hmm. How it's being portrayed, and so when you come back and you say, like, I remember, this is what the older folks used to tell me. So mm-hmm. now you're telling these young folks, no, the shit you're doing, I ain't think about doing,
right?
Because I respected my mother. You motherfuckers don't.
No, it's not.
I never had the opportunity to say, my ooh, I mm-hmm. never had that opportunity. Mm-hmm. Shut your fucking mouth,
right.
And that was it.
Totally different.
Totally God. Different. Now mm-hmm. they give you a debating conversation, mm-hmm. but now let's take it out of that realm and we're saying back to being built like that. Okay, police wanted me to say that I seen this Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I put myself somewhere where I wasn't? There's nothing to ever say that I implicated anybody in anything. Melhorn never fucked with no faggots in prison. Melhorn was never a snitch. Mm-hmm. If anything, I did the grievance. I did the IOC.
And what are those?
The IOC is the Inmate Liaison Committee. I represented the Inmate Liaison Committee. The grievance committee is representing the inmate population to fight against the administration. Mm-hmm. Things of that nature.
Okay.
Never fuck with no faggot. None of that shit. I had my beef.
I mean, that's to each his own. You know, we just...
No, but I'm just saying.
No,
I'm saying me, personally. I'm saying me, personally.
We are just making this clear because people are going to listen to
right.
it. But we
right,
just,
right, right,
as,
right.
As we speak on a street term and a street thing, nothing against the LTGB.
None of that. Nothing against.
It's just that when he's speaking of his loyalty for him being in jail from 19 years old, he's explaining to you what he did to keep his supposure. Like, there's a thing with the Nation of Islam, it's called knowledge of self. This is why we have to read all these different literatures to learn who we are and learn about who you know, where you came from and all this stuff. So he's saying, in other terms, in Lane, he was showing you what he did in jail. So when we speak about not messing with the gays, that's what he means.
Absolutely. And it, like I said, respect, because listen, I have family members who are part of the LGBTQ community,
mm-hmm.
and it's nothing to me.
Exactly.
It's
yeah,
nothing
we just
to
have
me.
To make
I
it
mean,
very
to
clear.
Each, no, to each his own,
exactly.
But that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Even when I even mentioned to the point of being a collaborator and shit like that, where mm-hmm. people is informing on people in prison mm-hmm. and shit like that, you know, never hear no shit like that. So when we say who was built,
mm-hmm.
you know, throughout time,
mm-hmm.
and like throughout my incarceration, I seen a lot of cases happen. And I seen things happen, whether it's with Nikki Barnes or this person, whatever. I see these cases happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, damn, these dudes is not built. If you in that life, stay in that life.
Right.
If you
right.
in that lane, stay in that lane.
Mm-hmm.
Why bring somebody else's down? Like, I used to tell people, like, okay, Fat Cat did what Fat Cat did, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how we look at it, right? I know for a fact that Pappy Mom, Nana, a woman that I know, mm-hmm. did 10 motherfucking years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Her son, Pappy, still locked up. What is that? That's my man who was built like that.
Exactly.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, this ain't no pretending shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I say I can go
shit.
Back and mm-hmm. say, well, this is the brother that I know.
Exactly.
I know where his mother and them used to live at on President Street. I know his
right.
brother T. Mason. It ain't like I'm talking about this shit. So when you say built like that, so my gravitational pull within the Nation of Gods and Earth led a snake to get close to me.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who I thought was my air-like self
mm-hmm.
to lie on me, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
For $1,000
mm-hmm.
or for slapping you in the face. And if it's not that, either you committed the crime. And if you didn't commit the crime and you know you lied on me, tell the fucking truth. Because what can they do to you? What can they do to you?
It's statute of limitations.
There you go, sis.
Right.
There you go.
Well,
so what is it?
If
you had a fear of me, come on, bruh. When I first went down, the guards from Brownsville wanted to, no, leave him alone. I need that Joker to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. Don't do nothing to him. And I'm not just saying
that. I'm about to say that. When you said, what does it mean? I said, that's going to be within him. You know what I mean? That's something that got to eat him up. You know what I'm saying? Nothing to do with you, but you do need him to set you free.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And this is a great interview because we need people to know the real. Like, it's so much fake, pretentious people. Like, I'm the type of chick, I can't get with everything. I can't. And it probably took me a while to even do this podcast. Only reason because of you, because it's too many podcasts right now.
Absolutely.
With everything that people start, it's like it turns into a fucking breadcrumb with 20 billion answers trying to eat off of one crumb. And I'm like, okay, it's nothing wrong with it, but I don't like just to be in a road or on a highway with you know, in a traffic jam. It's just, no, I gotta find a diversion. I have to find something else. See, the difference when I was growing up and what I did in my era, so the point people claim a Mike Tyson era, it was exclusive. But before there was a Mike, there was Jackie. Sorry about that, guys. Part two with Carl Miller, a.k.a. Melhart. We were just having a conversation that was so intense. But I think the last part where we left out was about what people kind of affiliate with you or remember you by. And I think we were talking about Mike. And I think Carl wanted to say something, Melhart, about that part.
Yeah, see, what I was saying about you, Jackie, is that, you know, you were somebody before you and Mike began to hang out.
That part.
And absolutely. And that's a natural fact. And one of the things that you were before Mike Tyson, before anybody knew, was Miss Broadway, because you had the star quality about yourself anyway. It wasn't arrogance in it. It was just that I'm confident in the young woman that I am, and I know who I am.
Thank you.
You exuded positive energy. And as you had to bring what some people may consider negative energy, if you had to bring that to somebody, it was deserving of the person who was receiving it. Outside of that fact,
thank you.
You just lived the life of Miss Broadway. Ain't no thank you. Thank you for thanking me. Shit. Because the introduction to you and me was like, you know, like the song say, we go a long way back. And yes, we do. And it was all good. It was nothing bad. You know, we had our turbulent times and things of that nature individually, you know, by me serving time for a crime I didn't commit. By you going through whatever it is that you went through, and you're still here as we talking, you know, we got 6 decades of our lives on this planet, and some of our fellow comrades and camaraderies did not make it. The women and the brothers in our life did not make it, but we made it. We're here for a reason,
yes,
and it's a purpose, and we're serving that purpose by me speaking with you. And by you doing the podcast, by you doing the things that you do in the community for the sisters and the brothers and all that you do, you're serving a purpose, you know.
Thank you.
And as I always said, there's always two sides to everybody's story. And if a person don't know the person, all they can do is speak.
Mm-hmm. Or assume and make an ass out of themselves.
We ain't going to give them the ass. Yeah. You know, we're not even going to give them the assume, mm-hmm. you and me. No, you take that ass and you be that ass by yourself.
Yeah.
Because if you really want to know the story, talk to me.
Right.
And if you don't want to know the story, talk to them jokers.
Exactly.
You know, but if you want to know the story, talk to me. That's why I was saying to you, perception of people. Yeah, Melhart did this crime. No, I didn't. Did you ever talk to me? Mm-hmm. And then when you talk to me, like, oh, yo, that was fucked up. Yeah, it was fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
But what did you do to try to rectify it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, this dude, yo, you can tell the truth.
Right.
Because if people wanted to spank you back then, they could have spanked you, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me. And like I tell people, we have chapters in our lives, right? Mm-hmm. Don't forget this chapter one.
Right.
I can, you know, you can flip a book back to chapter one.
Right.
But if I'm in chapter 47,
mm-hmm.
or we say we're in chapter 60.
Mm-hmm.
So why would we go back to chapter one?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have to live that life.
Right.
I don't have nothing to show and prove to you. But what I'm trying to do is say, hey, listen, this is what you need to do to rectify this situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That is it.
Okay. Well, how do people get to hear more about your story?
Well, my story is, it's on the Wrongful Conviction podcast with Jason Falon. It's in the Independent paper with Ted. I forget his last name, but it's in the Independent paper, which comes out in the Red Box in Brooklyn and things of that nature. And it's been talking about, you know, the wrongful conviction of so many people, but exclusively with me. You can get that. And by listening to this podcast, you get a history of who I am and what my fight is for. You know, and I'm glad that my sister, she got the, I think she got the best part of my fight. You know, because there were certain things that you have to be relegated to. Mm-hmm. You know, I could speak more of my truth here than anywhere else. And plus, it's going to the people. Right. It ain't being, you know, navigated through what we would say the bureaucracy. And, you know, like you was saying earlier about, you know, there's so many podcasts out here. But how many podcasts and brothers and sisters that have these podcasts keeping it 100, as we would say, or keeping it real, or as we would say, keeping it 1,000, dealing with the truth instead of just saying, let me try to glorify myself, but let me just bring the reality of the people that I know, not no pretenders, real people.
That part.
None of that, you know, and this is what's so good about, you know, Front Row with Jackie Rowe. And you're as real as you can be. I mean, I never seen nothing pretend. Like I said, when I was locked up and I hear people say, oh, Jackie, you know, I laugh. Man, I know Jackie before Mike Tyson knows Jackie. The way I know her, I know that she had aspirations to be the woman that she is today. She's not defined by Mike Tyson. That's a chapter of her life.
Thank you.
That's just a chapter. And she had many more chapters. As long as God give her the oxygen to breathe and she open her eyes, it's a new day.
Thank you.
So what's going to be written in that chapter? There's still some stuff to be told, you know?
I appreciate you so much.
I appreciate you. And like I said, we go a long way back, and it's not nothing pretending. When I say I love this sister, I love this sister.
Yeah,
it's nothing fake
too.
About it.
Absolutely.
And she knows. She called me. If I'm available, I'm going to be there, you know, under any circumstances. I never tell Jackie, yo, I need you to do this. Nothing. None of that. Mm. You know, but if
I say,
you've
been home
sister,
how long now?
I've been home going on 14 years, and I still been fighting this conviction.
Yes, that's what I wanted.
Still been fighting this conviction. And it's like, it's a struggle, but you know what? I'm in it. And I'm going to keep, you know, doing what I have to do. Like I said, I just came from my lawyer's office and them. Mm-hmm. And they're a very good team. And I appreciate what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They just got Smokes and them exonerated in January.
Awesome.
That's Eric Smoke and them. Yeah, yeah, they got exonerated. And he do good work. He do good work. Young brother, he's very serious about it. And like I tell him, you know, he said, don't say that. I say, win, lose, or draw. I appreciate what you're doing.
Just
you know,
like.
Because I know for a fact. Mm-hmm. As I stated to you earlier, Rabbi David Arkaniv knew in his soul and his spirit that his face, my face, wasn't the last face he's seen. Not at all. I know that for a fact, and I don't have to pretend about that, you know, so forth and so on. Like, when I came out...
You can sleep comfortable, you know. You can sleep comfortable. It's a difference of saying that, you know, when somebody accused you of something... You know, you could sleep comfortable knowing that it's not you. You know, mm-hmm. even though the world have this perception and all these things to say on everybody, even the family and these people that got you in the situation, you know within your heart you can go to bed comfortably knowing that
Absolutely.
It wasn't you.
Absolutely.
Just like I was going to say, it's just like me having this platform. I look and I listen to a lot of people's platform what they're doing. But I want a place where I know what, you know, like you said, I know real people that have done real things. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit up here and propagate and try to front and bring people that ain't about this and about mm-hmm. that. I came from a real era in my life, and I want to be able to still be able to open up a platform for people that are still alive to be able to share their stories, real stories, and put it out there for one to educate someone, because I feel like if I can catch one person, I'm not trying to catch the world. I'm not trying to be Captain Save-A-Ho or nothing. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to educate because my time has been great. I've lived to see 60 years old like a lot of people have, and you said haven't made it. So if I have platforms, I try to utilize them in ways that can help people. Like a lot of my friends that came out from my day, like, damn, Jackie, you've always been helping people. I said to you that know me, but to the other world, the other people, oh, she's a this, oh, she's a that. Oh, when she was with Mike Tyson, she thought she was this. You know what I mean? That's great. That's all good and well. Everybody has their own opinions of freedom of speech and freedom of life. But to know me is to love me. To not know me is to hate me. But, the, you know, I think you need to get on the side of knowing me, because I only absorb positive things. Mm-hmm. I only try to do positive things. You know what I'm saying? I'm not perfect. I've made mistakes in my life as growing up, but to learn, to err, to make mistakes is to learn. You see, when you keep doing those same things, then you could call me and say, oh, say this person is evil, this person is that. But I've made changes in my life, and this is what people need to grow. Growth. If you're not growing, then you're dumb growing. Mm-hmm. So I end my podcast with thank you so much, Mel Harkaw, for being my big brother for over 50 damn years. You know what I mean?
Your age.
I don't care. I'm not telling my age because I don't have no problems of being older.
48 years.
I don't know. I tell people all every day.
Saying, our relationship goes back 48 years.
Yeah, but they know if I'm 60, I've been down. I'm an OG. I've been down and I love it. You know how much people can't say that they're 60? I love it. I don't even feel and act like to us when we were growing up, 60 was a person with a cane. Hey, come on, yeah, grandma, get the. I'm still talking strong, whatever, you know, was in. I know I can probably be healthy. I know that because my podcast was based on me having borderline diabetic and borderline high blood pressure. But if I can be more healthy, I will have more energy to do all these awesome things that I have in my mind that I want to do. But I'm still grateful because I can talk, I can walk, I can see. I have 6 beautiful grandkids. I'm still angelically alive, and I'm blessed, and I'm too blessed to be stressed. So on that part, I love you guys for listening. I hope you can appreciate the long anticipated wait for me not being on my podcast. But like I say, I try to bring real things and real people into my circle so they can be able to let their stories be known. And, you know, hopefully, well, it did help one of my listeners. I'm one of my guests the other day. So I'm hoping that it can do more for Mel Hark, you know, Carl and other people that I want to put on my podcast. So guys, again, thanks for being the best part with Front Row with Jackie Rowe. You guys have a wonderful and blessed day, and see you soon.